Fantasy, you're in the 06010.
Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by Geico. Today is Monday, November 16th, and we are on the move. That's right, Field Yates, Matthew Berry with you in new digs for a few days.
Just for a few days.
Stefania Bell also joining us from a not Chateau
undisclosed Ducos, location.
But an undisclosed location. Daniel's like 15 feet away from us, but we are not in our new normal studios as we are deferring that space to Woj and Adam Silver and the rest of the people involved with the NBA draft for the next 3 days. So if it looks different for those that are watching, it is different. And we will be here until Wednesday, but same mediocre content promised as we always do deliver. Big day yesterday. Big day. Big day.
Oh, yeah. Big day. I mean, like, so it was a crazy day. It was a, I mean, you know, obviously perhaps the play of the year so far with Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, I was saying that right away. Like, that's the craziest finish I've seen all year. And then I was like, wait, am I blatantly forgetting something? And I have yet to rack my brain with a better finish.
I don't think so.
How about this?
I mean, just because, first off, it's two playoff teams. The fact that Josh Allen to Stephon Diggs, you know, scored the what we thought was the game winner with less than a minute to go. And then Kyler Murray, you know, I mean, not only was it like a typical Hail Mary where it's like, you know, they rush three and you sit back there forever. Like, there was a legit rush. And so Kyler Murray makes this insane run to avoid just being tackled, goes to his left. Obviously, he's a right-handed thrower. He goes to his left to avoid it and then chunks it up, like, whatever, 50-odd yards, you know, across his body. And then DeAndre Hopkins is – I mean, it's not like three guys – it's not like they forgot about him. He has three guys all right around him, and DeAndre Hopkins literally just outleaps three different dudes. Like, so I think just based on the difficulty of that play and who was playing and sort of – I think that's the finish of the year.
And with the way that standings are clustered right now, that game could very well have implications potentially for the Cardinals making the playoffs and then potentially for the Bills how they seed, as I do believe they will end up making the AFC playoffs with the way they've started this season. Tough way to go into their bye, but it's a tough and resilient group in Buffalo.
Yeah, so I mean, like, play of the year, but also, by the way – you know, another crazy play in Cleveland when Nick Chubb, you know, goes out of bounds at the 1 yard line. Obviously, tremendous fantasy implications for that. We understand why Nick did it, sort of. I mean, like,
we understand.
No, but the reason I say sort of is because his goal was for the Browns to win the game. But given the scoreboard, had he scored, they're up two scores with less than a minute to go. I think you could make the argument that they win the game regardless of if he makes that move or not.
Well, of course, they're 99.99% chance winning if he scores a touchdown.
Right.
But they're 100% winning if he just walks out of bounds with what he did. So I understand.
I personally have no issue with it, and I'm somebody that has Nick Chubb on a team. It just, like, listen, team first, NFL first, fantasy and gambling and everything 100%. Else. Much lower than that. But anyway, so you had that, and then you had a ton of big names just disappoint. Like, it was a massively disappointing week, I think, for a lot of big-name quarterbacks, for a lot of big-name players as well. So I'm sure we will get into all that today.
We will, of course, and we're going to start with the injuries, and we head to Stefania. And last year, Stefania, we saw life without Drew Brees for the Saints. He missed 5 games because of a thumb injury. They went 5-0, so they weren't that much worse for the wear with a great defense and, of course, Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara. Now, for at least a half, they were out without Drew Brees. And what do we know about his injury that caused him to sit out the second half of yesterday's win over your 49ers?
Well, here's what we know. It was a rib injury. I think it was classified as a rib/chest injury when he exited the game. Sean Payton said afterward that Drew Brees basically told him he couldn't go. And he said he never says that. So when Drew Brees is telling me he can't play because he's in too much pain, I know it's significant. Sean Payton also said that he would be undergoing an MRI. And, you know, this is, you do all kinds of imaging, but the MRI allows you to examine the soft tissue in a way that the traditional x-rays don't. So the complete picture of what the injury is, whether it's rib fracture, rib cartilage injury, etc., remains to be determined. But it certainly sounds like he's going to miss some time. And if you think about it, it looked like it was his right side that was problematic. Throwing motion for a quarterback, there's no way to do it without moving your entire rib cage. And so it's just such a painful injury that even if it ends up being an injury they consider stable, where he could play, functionality-wise, it may keep him down for a while.
And by the way, this is on top of the shoulder issue he's been managing in recent weeks as well. I know it hasn't prevented him from playing. He looked great last Sunday night against the Buccaneers, but he's been on the injury report legitimately for the past couple of weeks.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, that original shoulder injury, this goes back to the original shoulder injury that he had that led him to the Saints from the Chargers. And over time, there's degenerative changes that happen in that shoulder, not only as a result of that injury, but associated with playing the position of quarterback. And you're absolutely right, Field. I mean, if you add an injury anywhere into the shoulder girdle and essentially that rib cage, collarbone, it all contributes to the shoulder, it's going to make you be virtually ineffective as a quarterback if you're having trouble there.
Well, Jameis Winston took over for much of the second half with some doses of Taysom Hill mixed in, as always. We'll talk about Jameis plenty throughout the week. An interesting, I don't know, return down or trip down memory lane, as we know Jameis Winston was plenty of fun to start in fantasy most of the time last year. Same division, actually another quarterback that's been banged up in his own right and has since stood the test of time, Stefania. It's Drew Brees' former backup, Teddy Bridgewater, who left the game late for Carolina.
Yeah, he limped off the field after a tackle by JPP, and he was motioning to his knee, and you saw him go off and get examined right away, and my first thought was, this has got to be the opposite knee from the one that he dislocated back in the preseason of 2016 that cost him all of that year and most of the next one. It was, in fact, the other knee. Chris Mortensen with some good news this morning, reporting that no structural damage seen on the MRI that they took last night. Now it's a question of soreness and swelling and when is he able to get back. Obviously, you want him to be safe in order to protect himself, but the good news is that it does not appear to be a particularly serious injury at this time.
Okay, that is good news. And not that Teddy was really a fantasy starter, but there could be some trickle-down impact on Robbie Anderson and DJ Moore. Had a great game this past week. And Christian McCaffrey, who we expect has a chance to be back in Week 11. It could be PJ Walker time in Carolina if Teddy Bridgewater misses games. And then one more quarterback injury, Stefania. Matthew Stafford, who Lions victorious, and we'll get into that much later on, or much more later on in the show. Matthew Stafford, though, who has been one of the tougher dudes at quarterback for a while, now playing through some pain.
I actually was watching that game very closely, and so on the broadcast, there was a point in time late in the game where they cut away, and Matthew Stafford could be seen on the sideline throwing the ball, and then in between trying to throw it, playing with his thumb. Kind of like if you recall last year when Drew Brees was licking his thumb, Matthew Stafford is kind of doing this and wiggling his thumb around and then trying to grip the ball and throw it. And after the game, he did say that it didn't feel so hot. That was about the extent of what he offered, but he clearly was having trouble grip the ball. It sounds like they don't think there's anything major structurally wrong, something that he can play through. Remember, this is a guy who a few years ago dislocated a joint in his middle finger and tore ligaments and just had a custom-designed glove and played through it. It's really unbelievable the stuff that he has played through. Remember last year, tried to play through fractures in his back. This is a case where I do think he'll be able to continue to play as he was able to finish out the game yesterday.
That is good news there for the Lions. Very tough and durable quarterback. John Brown, Stefania, really exciting game as Matthew referenced in the desert between the Bills and the Cardinals. Buffalo goes into the bye week, but what's going on with John Brown?
He left with an ankle injury. It was late in the game, so we didn't really get a chance to see whether this was something he could have returned from. And he ultimately was out with this ankle injury. It's unfortunate because he's been dealing with lower extremity injuries most of this year, knee issue, calf injury. And he finally put together, I think, his best performance a week ago when he had 8 for 99 yards. But this week, injured again, and the bye week, you know, surely that has to help.
It's time for our daily, not even weekly, our daily 49ers update, Stefania.
I dread this
every week. Who's going to play running back for them next, as we got some news on Jamichael Hasty yesterday?
Right, Jamichael Hasty, It's just so sad. Fourth quarter injury, fractured collarbone, taken down on a tackle. He reached for it right away. You could tell by the pain he was in, and he went to grab it. Sort of the hallmark signs of a fractured collarbone. And he's essentially done for the year. Jerick McKinnon also late in the game suffers a stinger injury. The 49ers have a bye coming up. Kyle Shanahan said, we've never needed time off like we need it right now. And they are hoping that they will get Raheem Mostert and Tevin Coleman back after the bye. If the 49ers have done anything well this year, it's that they've created this carousel, essentially, a running back carousel, maybe a wide receiver one too, where they rotate out the guys who are hurt and they bring back the ones who are healthy. So Michael Hasty is done for the year with the fracture. Jerick McKinnon, who knows, with the stinger. Maybe it's something he could recover from in 2 weeks' time, but they are hopeful to get the other two back after the bye.
They come back in week 12 with the Rams on the road. We'll keep you updated on all those injuries as we get into week 12. But Stefania, one more for week 10. Don't want to turn the page entirely yet. Allen Robinson and the Bears play tonight, as we talked about extensively on Fantasy Football Now. He's been on the injury report, but do you expect him to play?
I do, based on his past, what he's done in the past, and he has played through things, and he's a gamer. He tries to play through injuries, even when sometimes they are compromising him. It doesn't sound like this is particularly serious. Some soreness in his knee that's giving him some trouble. I assume he will go out for pregame warmups and test it, and they will make the decision at that time. So as always, check your pregame inactives. But the word I'm hearing is that he plans to try to play.
Darnell Mooney available. Sorry, go ahead, Matthew.
I was just going to say, he's going to play.
He's going to play. Okay.
He's going to play. I'm just telling you
Matthew
right now.
Matthew Schefter says he will play, prepare accordingly. No, I think we all get the sense he will play. But just in case.
I have a source I trust. I'm telling you he's going to play.
Okay.
That's there you go.
The sauces have speaking.
There you go.
There we go.
Often.
Okay.
He's going to play.
But
I agree with you that Darnell Mooney, I think, is up for a good game and is a worthy roster addition, regardless of whether you have Allen Robinson or not. If for some reason he tested in the pregame, as Stefania is saying, and decides, you know, to tap out, Darnell Mooney would make a good pivot, but he's going to play.
Okay. There you go. Let's get to it. Stefania, well, don't go too far. We got a bunch of questions for you soon. We're going to start with some running back duos that were back to form yesterday. And actually, I want to go right to you, Stefania, as, you know, I follow a lot of people on Twitter. So what happens sometimes is if you got so many opinions out there, and some people are more knee-jerk, some are a little bit more balanced. And there were some knee-jerk opinions yesterday that said Nick Chubb looked slow. He looked not 100%.
Stop.
By the end of the game, he seemed like he was close to 100% to me.
Yeah, I mean, let's give the guy a break. First of all, it's not ideal weather circumstances coming back after basically over a month off from an MCL sprain and getting used to being in game activity again. But you saw him making good movement, and he had this one long 50-plus yard run where he really looked like power. And that's what I expect from Nick Chubb. So I was fine with it. The two main things, you know, do you get better as the game goes on, especially if you've been out for a while? And then number two, do you come back afterwards and have no setbacks? So nothing that we could see at the time. If you get a good report in practice to start the week, I'm fine with what I saw.
Okay. Good news for the Browns, as he looks really good to me as well, Stefania. They win yesterday. Final score is 10-7. As we mentioned, that Nick Chubb late 59-yard run could have been 60, and it could have been a touchdown as well. Would have catapulted Nick Chubb up to RB6 for the week. That being said, he still was RB11, or at least right now is RB11 on the weekend. Matthew, what we learned about this backfield is what we knew already based off of the first portion of the season when Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt were both playing, is that with these two on the field, things are chalky. You can play and start both of them and do so with confidence.
1,000%. You know, listen, the weather helped in this particular case. Like, why throw when you can run the ball effectively, which is what they did? And so you mentioned Nick Chubb, 126 rushing yards. He scores the one touchdown. Obviously, could have had the other one. As we talked about with the, you know, whatever it was, the 56-yard run? 59-yard run that he had late in the game that easily could have gone in there. But as we head into Monday Night Football, he's the 11th best running back in fantasy this week. Had he scored that touchdown, he would have been top six. But, you know, Kareem Hunt, over 100 rushing yards as well. Had caught three balls for 28 yards as well, 16.2 fantasy points, season highs in both rushing and receiving yards for Kareem Hunt. was surprising to me. Look, it was a great matchup, obviously, with Houston, and the weather conditions didn't lend themselves to passing the ball, but this is what they want to do. This is what Kevin Stefanski wants to do in Cleveland. He wants to run the ball effectively with both guys. I think if you were to ask him to name his starter, he would say, I've got two. Like, they're both guys are lead running backs on most NFL teams, and so they're going to be run heavy enough, and they have a good enough offensive line that both, especially this year, are very viable borderline RB1-2s. They're both, you know, top 12-ish guys. I prefer Chubb to Hunt just because I think more touchdown equity, but both guys very, very viable.
In Philly, you may read the box score and say maybe they have two viable running backs in their backfield as well, as Boston Scott actually finishes with more fantasy points yesterday than Miles Sanders, 14.4 to 13.5.
Yeah, oh yeah, I referenced it when I was talking. Oh. That's okay.
We've got crossed audios here, but that's okay. Anyways, on Miles Sanders and Boston Scott, keep the faith here if you roster Miles Sanders. He looked great yesterday. He had 85 rushing yards, plus he had two catches for 10 yards, 13.5 fantasy points. The big play of the day, or one of the big plays of the day, though, was Boston Scott, who scooted for a 56-yard touchdown. The play was reviewed, and not that I had any skin in the game, but I actually thought they would call it dead at, like, the 20-yard line. He tiptoed his way down there for a touchdown. Matthew, there's one Eagles running back that you can start. I know that Corey Clement got a touchdown as well, but this is just more bad luck for Miles Sanders than anything else.
It was very frustrating, I think, if you have Miles Sanders on your roster. I get that. And make no mistake, in the preseason, I was very much like, Doug Peterson likes a committee. He likes a multi-running back approach. You know, I'm a little bit down on Miles Sanders. I had him ranked a little bit lower than consensus as a result of that. And by the way, I think I've been proven right. However, I've been proven right a little bit, mostly more by his injury and just sort of the bad luck of the Eagles than necessarily the fact that Boston Scott cut into his workload significantly. I sort of kind of lucked out on the analysis there, because the truth is I agree with you, Field. Like, if there's an Eagles running back you want, it's Miles Sanders. Yes, bad luck yesterday, but over 70% of the snaps, over 70% of the running back touches went to Miles Sanders. And in fact, you know, the ESPN trade deadline is coming up here in the next week or two.
November 25th.
I think Miles Sanders is a great trade target to see if you can acquire him from somebody that has him on his roster and is probably frustrated seeing Corey Clement, seeing Boston Scott, because a deeper dive into the numbers, and the truth is that, you know, Miles Sanders played 44 snaps last week, this Sunday. Boston Scott played 18. Corey Clement probably played less than 10. Yeah. Right? He got the one touchdown, and it's just bad luck, but honestly, it's his third different game this season with 17 or more touches. And look at their upcoming schedule, Field, just very quickly. At Cleveland, home to Seattle, at Green Bay, home to New Orleans. You know, not a schedule that scares you at all.
I would agree on that. I think it's going to be hard to trade for Miles Sanders only because there are so few good running backs. But I like the idea of at least trying to make him a target of yours. We have breaking news into the show. Daniel, is there a drop available or no? Because
ESPN Radio, breaking news.
Dan, you look handsome over there in that blue backdrop, Daniel. Well done.
Thank you, Field.
We have big news. It stinks. Adam Schefter has just tweeted, just moments ago, that Christian McCaffrey is unlikely to play on Sunday for the Carolina Panthers, according to a source. This is just 2 minutes ago from Adam Schefter. So, unlikely to have Christian McCaffrey. And we'll see on Teddy Bridgewater. They play against the Lions this upcoming Sunday. So, I would say that we know the analysis here, right? Mike Davis, not because he's been great recently, but because he's still the guy when Christian McCaffrey is out, will be probably a top 25-ish running back option.
Yeah, but it's been tough.
It has been tough for Mike Davis, but still, right? Like, find me 25 better running backs.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they just made J.D. McKissick look like an all-star. And Antonio Gibson, we'll get into that game in a little bit. But, yes, 100%, just based on the volume and the matchup, Mike Davis will once again be somebody that probably should be in lineups and likely will be a popular DFS play. He certainly was. He was very chalky this week, didn't really pay off for people that used him in DFS. Boy, just an incredibly frustrating season for those with Christian McCaffrey on their roster. I'm sure a frustrating season for the Panthers and for Christian McCaffrey himself as well. Yeah. You know, it's one of those things. It's like, you know, when you think about, like, listen, losing Saquon Barkley is, and I'm merely, again, I'm just speaking purely fantasy-wise, right? But, like, you lose Saquon Barkley for the season, and that is awful and terrible, right? But at least you know it's over with, and you can figure out fantasy-wise what you need to do with your roster. With Chris McCaffrey, you've had to hold on to him this entire time. You got one game, and now it's, you know, so it's been but tough season for everyone with Christian McCaffrey, and you feel bad. You feel bad for Christian himself, his family, and all the Panthers fans. It's just tough season.
We'll get back to the running backs in just a second that were in committees. But, Stefania, anything you want to add there on McCaffrey?
I think just, look, we were happy to find out that he had a chance to play again this season. And one of the things we talked about on Fantasy Football Now was that these type of shoulder injuries with running backs, contact is your worst fear, right? Because you escape a serious injury, but you know that they're going to lower their shoulder. They're either going to take a direct hit from being tackled or they're going to get taken to the ground and hit that shoulder. So they have shown already, the Panthers have, that they want to protect McCaffrey until he's fully healthy. Look at how they brought him back from the high ankle sprain. He probably was pushing to come back a little bit earlier, and they wanted to hold him out. So if you look at that, they want to err on the side of being conservative, and he has to be functional. He has to be able to catch the ball. He has to be able to protect, and then he has to be able to take a hit and land on that shoulder, and it's just going to take some more time. The only other thing I'd point out, in that tandem, Mike Davis did leave briefly with a finger injury yesterday. I don't think it's anything major that will keep him from playing, but nonetheless, a little bit banged up himself.
And to your point, he did return later in the game. All right, the Rams' backfield remains what it is. It's hard to figure out whether there's any value whatsoever in this backfield on a weekly basis. Darrell Henderson scored a touchdown. That's good. Problem is, Malcolm Brown had two of them. And in terms of snaps, 28 for Malcolm Brown, 23 for Darrell Henderson, 18 for Cam Akers. It is a committee in the truest sense. Matthew, I've been arguing for weeks now that, like, if we haven't figured it out by week 7 or week 8 or 9 or 10, then we're never going to figure it out. It is what it is. Darrell Henderson might in some weeks be an RB2. In some weeks, he might just fall flat as even a flex option. Malcolm Brown's going to pop up enough to make things annoying, but there is really no Rams running back that you'd like to be starting weekly.
Yeah, I think if you have to pick one, I think it is Darrell Henderson.
I agree on that.
I think it is more Malcolm, to me, Malcolm Brown and Cam Akers, at least at this point, are more about sucking the value out of Darrell Henderson than any standalone value they have. Right? So Malcolm Brown hasn't had more than 10 carries since week 2. You're hoping Malcolm Brown falls in the end zone, which he has a couple of times this year, right? I mean, he had a multi-touchdown game in week 1. He had one yesterday. Like, he had a touchdown against Washington. Like, right, so he's been okay, you know, when he's gotten touchdowns, but he is truly touchdown dependent. He's a rich man's Jordan Howard.
Wow.
But no, seriously.
Like multi-billionaire. At least he can actually play. Jordan Howard gets healthy scratch.
Yeah. I guess, I mean, just like, I know Jordan, you know what I mean, though. Jordan Howard, like when Jordan Howard was, you know, an active player. My point is that Malcolm Brown needs a touchdown to pay off. He doesn't have enough other game usage, you know, to be viable.
Right.
Would you agree with that?
No, I agree.
Okay, you agree with that. Cam Akers, so far we have not seen him have any passing game usage at all. He's played 5 games this year. He's got 2 targets.
Mm-hmm.
2 targets in 5 games.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he played the 18 snaps. And he had some moments, and by the way, they gave him some close-in rushes. So, like, they were trusting him in goal-to-go situations, which is, I think, positive for Cam Akers. But I still think, to the eye test, and I'm curious how you feel about this, to the eye test, Darrell Henderson, to me, looks like the best running back.
Sure,
he looks
but
like the
I
guy
don't
that
care
has
about
the
eye test.
I understand. So my point is that I think it is unlikely that Darrell Henderson loses his role due to talent. Like, he could get injured, and that's maybe coming off the thigh injury, maybe they wanted to ease him back in. And Lindsay Theory, who does a great job covering the Rams for us on Fantasy Football Now Sunday morning, she discussed this, and she said, hey, you're going to see more Cam Akers. That is part of what they want to do in the second half of the season, is work Cam Akers into the rotation more and more. I still think if you're starting any one of these guys, it's Darrell Henderson, assuming health for all of them. But I agree with you. The emergence of Akers and the continued presence of Malcolm Brown keeps Henderson as nothing more than an upside flex play.
By the way, on Jordan Howard, to close the circle there, you think he finishes the season with the Dolphins, or does he get cut? Some cost, move on, save yourself some cash.
That's a great question. I would say I think he stays there because of depth, but then I think to myself, like, again, you think about depth.
Running backs hurt yesterday. Yeah.
That's right. If ever there was a week, like, no Miles Gaskin, no Matt Breida, no Lynn Bowden, like, if ever there was a week just to be active, to have a body out there,
yeah,
it would have been Sunday, and he was once again a healthy scratch. I think you're right. It's interesting for and I'm a Jordan Howard apologist, but he has not looked like the same guy this year that he did last year in Philadelphia. So it's weird that he has just sort of all of a sudden hit the wall. And for as much as we want to praise the Miami Dolphins organization, and they have done so many things right, Field, Jordan Howard might be among the worst free agent signings of the year.
I'll give him a mulligan on that. They've done so much correct.
They've
so
done
far
so much correct. Yep. That's what I'm saying.
I hear like, it was not good. Not good at all. But that being said, I wonder if he finishes the season in Miami. File that one away for the rest of
the season. Wouldn't be surprised. And do you think he gets picked up anywhere?
Maybe. I could see him, and I don't want to get too far into the weeds here, but the rest of his base salary for this year is not onerous enough that a team like maybe Philadelphia, who could use a little bit more power backfield action, maybe would consider reclaiming the old friend Jordan Howard. Hey, from the moment they're born, you do everything to keep your kids safe. But who's looking out for you as you look out for them? The Volvo XC90 SUV with advanced safety technology helps look after you. From the standard blind spot information system that watches your sides, it can steer you away from merging traffic, to standard cross-traffic alert with auto brake that watches your back and can automatically apply the brakes for people and oncoming traffic as you reverse. It's nice to know that someone is looking out for you. The XC90, for everyone's safety. Visit volvocars.com/US to learn more.
If you're missing the fun of the ballpark right now, you're not alone. But just because you can't be in the stadium doesn't mean you can't bring that classic ballpark feeling home. And the best way to do that is with Ballpark Buns and Rolls. Ballpark and the ballpark go together like baseball and summer. They're an America's pastime and America's favorite buns and rolls. They're an essential part of the celebrations, both big and small. There's nothing worse than your bun breaking under the pressure. And guess what? Ballpark buns and rolls never fall apart on you. They're always freshly baked, always soft, and always delicious. Ballpark buns and rolls are a great way to get a carefree taste of summer any time of the year. Whether you share them at a backyard barbecue, a fall tailgate, or any manner of celebration year-round, you can't help but enjoy yourself when enjoying a ballpark bun creation. So next time you're picking up essentials for grilling, tailgating, a little slow cooker action, or maybe just a nostalgic night in, make sure you grab ballpark buns and rolls. Find them wherever you shop for groceries.
Keep things rolling here with the backfield breakdowns of note. And Matthew and I had a board bet for when Kenyon Drake returned, who would score more fantasy points on a per-game basis between he and Chase Edmonds. Matthew has an astounding 0.8-point lead as yesterday Kenyon Drake had 100 rushing yards on 16 carries, plus one catch for 9 yards on one target. But he had one of those fumbles that it was almost like it was like a perfectly placed fumble. Like the ball went like 7 yards in the air and fell right into the lap of a Bills defensive player. Meanwhile, Chase Edmonds, who played a decent amount, but certainly not as much as Kenyon Drake, had 56 rushing yards, but 3 catches on 3 targets for 21 yards. Eye test continues to show that he's a better player in the passing game this year. Drake is the workhorse, though. That's what it's going to be what it is, and I can't imagine that changing absent injury.
No, it won't, but I think when you think about the Arizona offense and what they do well, it's having the ball in Kyler Murray's hands and passing. It's a pass-first offense, right? I mean, that's where they've found the success this year. So you'd rather have, to me, you'd rather have the passing down back than Kenyon Drake. I get it with the volume here, but this was interesting. Chase Edmonds had 11 touches, and that is the most he's had in a healthy Kenyon Drake game this entire year. So maybe there is, I wouldn't say a changing of the guard, but maybe Chase Edmonds has continued to chip away at Kenyon Drake's role so that there's more of a timeshare than initially it was before. Because even though Chase Edmonds was being very efficient, it was heavily skewed in terms of Drake to Edmonds in terms of touches, in terms of snaps, et cetera, et cetera. And so maybe there's a little bit more of a closening, if you will, between the two of them.
Daniel has a thought and I have a thought. Daniel, you first.
Matthew, does that mean at this point that you are going to be ranking Chase Edmonds ahead of Kenyon Drake more often than not going forward for the rest of the season?
I think it'll depend on the matchup and how that team does against pass-catching running backs and, you know, looking at it. But I will tell you that I will, and this has been the case for a while now, I have them traditionally much closer than the fellow rankers.
Sure.
The rest of our rankers tend to have Drake's, you know, 20 spots ahead of Chase Edmonds, and I usually have them within a round of each other, like within 10 picks of each other, you know, sure. 10 spots.
Well, yep. Also part of this is that Kenyon Drake was hurt coming into this game. I know Stefania wants to chime in on how he looked.
I thought he looked really good, and in fact, I thought he worked a little more than I expected, given that all he did was limited work in practice leading up to this start, and they play on Thursday night. And so if they were worried about conserving him, they sure didn't show it. And I think that's why I would take this first outing as very strong for Kenyon Drake based on how he looked running, the amount of work that he got, and the fact that they didn't seem worried about having another game in 4 days.
Interesting search situation indeed. Matthew, what do you
got? Just that, look, you likely have to keep rolling him out there because, you know, it's hard to find a running back getting 15 or so touches in a high-powered offense. All that said, he's obviously been a disappointment this year. And you look at their upcoming schedule field.
I got a question.
So they're at Seattle on Thursday.
Yep.
Then they're at New England, which is a defense that's, you know, been up and down, obviously, this year. But I don't think it's a pushover defense. Then home to the Rams. That's not a great matchup. And then an improving Giants defense on the road at the Giants defense. Like, it's not a schedule you're like, oh, boy. But it's also not a schedule you're like, for a guy that's been struggling fantasy-wise, that you feel like, oh, well, here's a stretch where he's going to sort of take off.
You know what's crazy is how much preseason rankings influence our decision-making throughout
yes.
the course of the season. Kenyon Drake is how much better as a fantasy asset than Damian Harris? How much better is he?
I mean, not much at all.
He's got 8 catches all year. All right.
Right.
So I think he might. I think Harris has 4, maybe.
Right.
So about 4 extra catches. And who's a better runner right now?
Damian Harris.
And yet we're valuing them as
of
like
course.
15 to 18 slots apart in a lot of weeks. Harris is this volume-dependent, touchdown-dependent back, low-end flex play. Kenyon Drake, yeah, high-end RB2. We need to recalibrate some stuff, like, I mean, distance ourselves from the preseason. And I'm as guilty of it as anybody.
1,000%. I think fantasy managers and fantasy analysts alike, we put a lot of stock into sort of draft capital. Right? I mean, like, here's the thing. Like, where are you going to rank? We haven't done our rankings for week 11 yet. And I don't know off the top of my head who Miami plays this week. But, like, where would you rank Kenyon Drake versus Salvin Ahmed, who was who got, like, every running back touch for the Dolphins last week? Last week. And, by the way, shout out to Shefty, because that was Shefty's long shot on Fantasy Football Now. Great call by him. My long shot had an okay game. Shefty's was Ahmed, and he was unbelievable. But, you know, like, where would you rank that guy? Because we don't expect Myles Gaskin back this week.
So, can't play this week, yeah.
Right.
I probably will rank him as, like, a top 17 to 18 running back play. I got to think about that
but
one
you're,
more.
But you understand?
Know,
I'm like,
crazy.
But just to your point about draft capital, a guy that, like, most people in fantasy football hadn't heard of 48 hours ago, right? And then versus, you know, a guy that was a consensus, you know, top 12, like, whatever. I had him like 14. But, like, most people had him as a top 15 running back, and he went for in a lot of places in the first round as a top 10 running back.
Let's keep it rolling here with a couple more backfields. Yeah. Actually, one more in Washington.
So hey, now.
Really an impressive performance by the Washington football team to climb back from down 24-3. Very inspiring from Alex Smith to see him do what he did on this day from a fantasy perspective.
Yeah, we can call some love, and once again, I will just once again give a shout out to Stefania Bell and the E60 team and their Project 11 documentary. If you have ESPN Plus, I believe you can watch it on demand. I don't know if it's anywhere else that you can watch on demand, but it is really terrific and inspiring when you see what Alex went through to get back onto the field. Stefania got incredible access to the entire Smith family, so kudos to her and the entire team there. It's really worth watching. It's great.
As far as the backfield is concerned, we might actually have a situation where there are two viable pieces. And the crazy part is the one that maybe is more of a toss-up is Antonio Gibson. We'll talk about J.D. McKissic in a second. Gibson has 45 rushing yards, 2 touchdowns yesterday, plus 4 catches on 4 targets for 20 yards. So a big day, 22.5 fantasy points. But Gibson seems like the player that's got more variance week in and week out. The reason why is J.D. McKissic yesterday continues his absurd run as a pass catcher. He had 15 targets. He's got 29 targets over the past 2 weeks. 29. Keenan Allen is jealous of that target share. He has been, and again, the floor is high, is reasonable.
Find somebody that looks at you the way Alex Smith looks at J.D. McKissic.
He does love him, right?
I just six. And here's the thing. Like, we talked about the last 2 weeks and the 29 targets, right? But this is a guy that has at least six catches and 40 yards in five of the past six. Like, he is the ultimate floor player. He's what we thought Nyheim Hines was going to be coming into the season. And he's, you know what I mean? Nyheim Hines,
yeah, totally.
Also another variance guy. But like he's a guy that you can lock in for 10 to 14 points. And then if you get a touchdown, it's a bonus. But J.D. McKissic is a thing, especially because the expectation here is that Alex Smith will remain the starting quarterback of Washington for the foreseeable future. And they do like McKissic. Look, Washington is a team that is, you know, trying to find its way on offense, and you know they're getting some more contributions from other people, but McKissic is somebody that, you know, listen, they like a lot. They feel like they found something and they found the right role for him. I agree with you. Like, Antonio Gibson's the player with more variance. Like, he's a little bit more touchdown dependent for fantasy value.
Crazy to think, but fantasy football is very weird. All right, we're going to get to the bet between Matthew and Daniel involving this game. Of course, Daniel's beloved Lions, Matthew's beloved Washington football team. But first, the Geico good news of the day is DeAndre Swift is a beast. That man looked awesome yesterday. He had a season high, a career high at that, in terms of rushing attempts, 16. Receptions, 5. Receiving yards, 68. He played over 70% of the snaps. And the eye test tells you what you need to know, is that it's not close. And I know that we all knew this for weeks, months. But he is clearly the most talented running back on the Lions roster. And
good
I get
we
it.
We waited until week 10 to start him.
Right. So how does Daniel really feel about it? The hope here is just that the Lions are going to allow the talent to rise here and continue to lean on DeAndre Swift. Because if they do, he's got a chance to finish as, you know, at least going forward, a weekly top 20 option. If he gets the snap share that we saw yesterday, Matthew, just watch. I mean, he was great in the passing game. He's got a ton of wiggle. He's got a ton of burst. Really talented guy.
He really is. He looked the part of a franchise running back. A couple of things that are important here. Looked the part of the franchise running back. And by the way, looked significantly better than Kerryon Johnson and Adrian Peterson.
Yep.
And the reason, like, and there's nothing that he did that makes me think, like, okay, they gave him a big workload, and there's nothing that happened during that game where you're like, oh, that was a mistake. We got to dial him back. We've got to, you know, just, you know, have less packages for him. He was great, and to your point, every aspect, he is somebody that's involved in the passing game. They're running him between the tackles, and also feel they're giving him, like, one of the concerns on Swift coming into the season was, are they going to give Adrian Peterson all the goal-to-go carries? Well, they've been giving him for a while. They've been using him in those short yardage situations, and he's converting them. So I just don't know. Matt Patricia and Bob Quinn, they come from the Patriots in New England, and they come from that running back by committee school of thought. But I just don't know how those two decide after what we've seen, like, that, you know what, we gotta go 30-30-30 in terms of our snaps with these three guys. DeAndre Swift, to me, is a top 15 fantasy running back the rest of the way.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't think it's that far off. And by the way, as Matt Harrington just said to me in my ear, what happens if he catches that pass in week one? Not
right.
Only do the Lions win and they're 5-4, but like, maybe they don't lose faith in this player. I'm not saying they lost faith entirely, but maybe his workload is steadier from an earlier juncture. All right, so let's get to the bet. The payoff, I should say, is
right.
You guys made a wager on this game. Daniel very kindly gave Matt the points. So the Lions were favored by 3. The stakes were if the Washington football team won or lost by
4.
3 or fewer.
Matthew took 4. Yep.
Okay. So when the bet, the line was Lions minus 4.
The line was always minus 3, but you read it wrong in the sheet, so that's why we stuck with minus 4.
No, it was minus 4. I'm telling you.
Wow. Okay.
I promise.
It moved.
It didn't. But we're going to stick with minus 4 because I'm a man of my word, Matthew Berry, as a veteran, someone that stands up for integrity for our country.
Dang right.
I'm with
you. Fair enough. Well, by the way, so we were all texting. We had a group text going during the game. And Daniel at one point offered me Lions minus 10 with no protection. So the original bet was Lions minus 4, and we would be able to just, in the league that we do for this show, the loser would have to give up 2 players to the winner of the winner's choosing after they protected 2 players. So Daniel offered at the middle of that game, he says, let's do Lions minus 10 with no protection. And
Daniel,
I was like, no, let's stick with the—
I have no doubt.
Let's stick with the— – but at one point, the Lions were up 24-3. And so—
I recall.
Right. So anyway, we agreed on a bet, and we're sticking with it. And I was like, no, let's just stick with the original bet. But it could have been much worse for you, Daniel.
Could have been much worse. I do want to say this, though. I think I got swindled. by an old man. Not only did the football team lose, which is exactly what Matthew Berry wants.
Right.
But he won the bet.
Yeah.
He did.
You that was a perfect
things.
Outcome for me.
It really was.
Because listen, Washington's not going anywhere this year. I'd rather have the good draft pick. I'm also not worried about Ron Rivera and Scott Turner and Jack Del Rio. I'm not worried about that staff. Like, Dan Snyder and the organization and the ownership structure of that team realize there is a long rebuild ahead. So it's not like, and I don't like Ron Rivera and Scott Turner. And I like the organization there. So I don't want them to leave. So, but I'm not worried about losses this year because I'd rather just, you know, we need players. I'd rather have high draft picks. So that was a perfect result for me.
And you do need players on your team here in Fantasy. the team here at the podcast. We have a podcast show league, and here's what we're going to do. And you can see Daniel's roster for those that might be checking out the touchscreen. And Daniel has the right to protect two players.
Yep.
And then Matthew has the right to choose a corresponding player from Daniel's roster that's left over. But if he chooses, for example, a quarterback, Daniel gets a quarterback from Matthew's roster
in return.
Yep. So this is not quite backbreaking for
Daniel.
Position
for position.
Yes. So, Daniel, let's get to it.
I'm going
to protect on your roster.
But the other thing is I get to choose who I send back.
Correct.
Right.
Right.
So Daniel will be hopefully not crippled by this move. But let's get to your players you're protecting, Daniel. This is your roster for those that are watching the touchscreen.
So for those that are listening at home, I'll just run through it real quickly. My quarterbacks are Kyler Murray and Ryan Tannehill. My running backs are Christian McCaffrey, Chris Carson, Melvin Gordon, Leonard Fournette, James White, and Zach Moss.
Okay.
My wide receivers are DeAndre Hopkins, A.J. Brown, Brandon Cooks, Travis Fulgham. By now, you guys are probably wondering how I got all these people in the same league, huh?
Yeah.
Preston Williams. And then
I'm in the league.
Are Mike Gesicki and Jared Cook.
Right.
So I think for me, there's a little bit of this here. Where there's a little bit of strategy. I know that Matthew has Tom Brady at quarterback. So if I'm not worried about protecting Kyler Murray because if I got Tom Brady back, I'd be fine with it. I believe I'm going to protect Christian McCaffrey in spite of the fact that he has barely played this year. I think he's still just a league winner. And I'm going to protect DeAndre Hopkins.
No surprise there. All right, Matthew. So as we take a look at the remaining players that you can acquire from Daniel Dopp, immediate instinct to me would suggest it could be Chris Carson.
Right.
Even with Tom Brady, I still think I would be upgrading to Kyler Murray. But
right. So that's the big. So here's the
AJ Brown looks like a good piece.
So here's where we are in the league. So Secret Squirrel's at 7-2. He's tied for first. I'm 5-4. I'm most likely. I've had some bad luck. I have the most points against me in this league, and I also lost Saquon Barkley. So I've had some bad luck in this league, but I'm 5-4. I'm right in the thick of it. Matt Harrington and Not Cool Keith also tied for 5-4 in our division. I'm likely going to lose to Mike Clay today. I'm up 10 going into tonight, but he has Dalvin Cook and the Bears defense. So unless Dalvin Cook and the Bears defense get less than 10.
I know you're Monday Night Miracle for tonight.
Yeah. But anyway, so here's the thing. So to me, the most obvious, to me, the players that you look at this are Kyler Murray, Chris Carson, and A.J. Brown. To me, those are the three best guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the debate is the only quarterback I have on my team is Tom Brady. So, yes, Kyler Murray to Tom Brady is an upgrade, but is it a significant upgrade? Meanwhile, here are my running backs, okay? Like, I have this week I had to start Giovanni Bernard and Kalen Ballage because I had Todd Gurley on a bye, and I have DJ Dallas. I have Raheem Mostert coming back, but like I've been piecing it together ever since I lost Saquon, right? And then at wide receiver, you know, I mean, listen, I had Tyreek Hill on a bye this week, but you know, Deontay Johnson, Robert Woods,
Chase Claypool.
I have Mike Williams. I could give him Mike Williams. Because that's part of it as thinking about who you give back, right? I'd probably give you Mike Williams.
Let's cut to the chase here.
Well, no, I think
we put out a poll. How about
put out a poll? I want the thoughts of the people. So we're going to put this out. I think to me, I think it's two of those three players. So it's the thing is, listen, obviously I could just give him Kalen Ballage for Chris Carson. That's an obvious one. Mike Williams for A.J. Brown, also an obvious one. Tom Brady for Kyler Murray. So the question is, the question of the people, to the good people of the Fantasy Focus 06010 Nation, is the upgrade from Brady to Kyler Murray worth it enough to not get either Chris Carson, who would be an upgrade over my second running back, clearly, right? Or A.J. Brown, who is, I think, despite what he did this week, it, you know, would be a starting wide receiver for me the rest of the way, like A.J. Brown over Mike Williams, right? I have Deontay Johnson. I have Chase Claypool. We'll put out a graphic of my team as well. I do have Tyreek Hill. So, I don't know. It's interesting.
We'll think about it.
Right?
I vote for Chris Carson. We're going to talk about pass catchers in just a moment.
So, your vote would be Chris Carson and Kyler Murray. Sounds like.
Chris Carson would be my vote. Yeah.
No, I get two.
You get one.
You get one.
We protect one, you get one. We protect two, you get one.
No, I thought we said two and two. We protect two and then we get two. Listen, I thought that was like...
I already gave you the minus four because you'd read it wrong.
No, I want to go back and
you get
listen.
One player.
Hey, I thought for sure it was two players.
So you get one player.
I'll go back and listen. I'll go back and listen. We'll clarify it. If I am wrong, absolutely two is totally...
And if I'm wrong, I'll apologize. In my mind, it was always two. You protected two and then you got two.
I'll go back and listen. We'll verify.
That's what I thought it was. But if it was one, it was one.
Okay.
So your vote's Chris Carson.
My vote would be Chris Carson if it's one, and obviously Kyler if it is two. We're going to talk about pass catchers in just a moment. But first, Shell knows that between every tee-up, layup, and batter-up that you can't wait to catch up with your favorite podcast. So come to Shell and get three things done at once. First, fill up with Shell V-Power Nitro Plus to help keep your engine running like new. Then save up with the Fuel Rewards program and never pay full price for gas again. And finally, snack up with in-store rewards to save even more at the pump. Oh, time to wrap it up. Make the most of the stop you need to make with Shell and engines that continuously use Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline. See full terms and conditions at fuelrewards.com.
Do you own or rent your home? I'm sure you do. And I'll bet it can be real hard work sometimes. But you know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. And it's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around the house. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
By the way, I'm looking at the scores in this league, in our show league. My bad luck continues, by the way. Like, you and Secret Squirrel are in a matchup where you have 94 points. Secret Squirrel has 104. He's done. And you have Adam Thielen going tonight.
Oh, I have a chance like, in that league. Nice.
I'm just saying. But, like, whatever. I'm at 136, which is the highest score of the week. Mike Clay's at 126. Everyone else in this league is at, like, 94, 104. Stefania scored 109. Matt Harrington, 84, 89.
Thirsty
Kyle,
week.
86.
There was some tough scoring this week, though, in fantasy across
I know,
the board.
And I got 136, I'm going to lose. Like, yeah. I played the one guy. You know, Mike Clay had, like, a ridiculous game this week. Who didn't Mike have? Oh, yeah, Mike had Alvin Kamara. Yeah, there you go. And Josh Jacobs.
We should have drafted those two guys then, Matthew.
Yeah, apparently.
All right, let's keep things rolling because we have a lot.
Then I stupidly drafted Saquon. What are you going to do?
Let's talk some pass catchers, and we'll just quickly run through some of these because some of these guys are really good. Buccaneers, another game with Tampa Bay having both Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, plus Antonio Brown. Mike Evans continues his solid season, 6 catches, 77 yards, and yet another touchdown. Chris Godwin had 6 catches for 92 yards. That was his highest of the season. Meanwhile, Antonio Brown had 7 catches, most on the team, for 69 yards. Now, it was clear that the number one and number two receivers in terms of utilization, snaps, routes run, etc., were still Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. Did the needle move at all yesterday for you, Matthew, in this Bucs offense?
Yeah, just a little bit. Like, I do think there's going to be 4. It's what we expected. Right, which is that all 4 are going to, from this point forward, all 4 of the main pass catchers, and I include Antonio Brown and Rob Gronkowski along with Evans Godwin, all 4 of them are going to have big games. It's going to be tough to predict when those are. Like, we did not think Mike Evans would have a good game here based on what he has traditionally done against Carolina. We expected, you know, shadow coverage from Butler. We talked about that on Fantasy Football Now with Mike Clay, and obviously Evans had a great game, right? I mean, you know, he had 11 targets, 6 for 77 and a touchdown. Antonio Brown could have had a monster day. Like, there was early in the game, there was like a 52-yard pass to Antonio Brown. Like, he had the guy beat deep. He had single coverage. He was going down the field. And Tom Brady just missed him by a country mile.
Correct.
Like, but, like, if Tom Brady hits him in stride, that's a 52-yard touchdown, and we're talking about Antonio Brown's day entirely differently. So, you know, he's still got a lot. I mean, he's still got 8 targets. Like, if you're telling me in that offense that, hey, here's a wide receiver with his talent, with Antonio Brown's talent, that's going to be getting 8 targets a game, like, you'd take that.
Yeah, no doubt about that.
I mean, he had 13.6 fantasy points. That's a solid day at the office.
I think there's go ahead.
And then we've got Chris Godwin, and Gronk gets the touchdown to salvage his day. My point is that I still think the pecking order, for me going forward, I would think it's still, to me, Godwin 1, Evans 2. Ooh. Yeah, I do think.
Evans 1 for me.
Okay.
Antonio Brown 2.
Wow.
Chris Godwin 3. Yeah.
I think, but I'm going to have them all right there. Like, we talked about in fantasy. Give me a second, and then I'll be quiet and let you talk here. But I was going to say, is it's like one of the things we talked about in fantasy football now is when the Steelers came up, and I had Chase Claypool, Juju Smith-Schuster, and Deontay Johnson all inside my top 22. And you were like, wow, you have all three guys as basically starters this week. You know, you really think that offense can support it? And I'm like, I do. And that obviously ended up working out against the Bengals. I think more often than not, this offense is going to be able to support three top 30 wide receivers.
That's right. We have two teams that can do that. And you actually segued us beautifully from Tampa Bay to Pittsburgh because the Steelers paid off in those top 22 rankings. How about this? Deontay Johnson, 23.6 fantasy.
So how do you go finish your Bucks thought, though. I cut you off.
Evans is a touchdown maker, and it's not close. I think Antonio Brown's volume is going to outpace Chris Godwin's volume going forward.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It very well could. Factor.
I mean, if he's
it's all close for me.
Half the snaps and he has 8 targets, what does it look like when he's playing all the snaps? Because that time will soon come. This is not like, you know, some mid-season acquisition of a guy that's like, it's not Golden Tate a couple of years ago. Mohamed Sanu last year. This is Antonio Brown. So, yeah, I think he's going to end up pacing ahead of Chris Godwin in terms of targets.
My only reason for it was just because Evans is so touchdown dependent that in games in which Godwin's been active, Evans has been disappointment fantasy-wise. So interesting to see. But I think we both agree that all three are fairly viable. Anyway, go ahead with Pittsburgh.
I was just going to say, talk about taking advantage of a great matchup. The Steelers yesterday get 23.6 fantasy points from Deontay Johnson, 6 catches, 116 yards, and a touchdown. Juju Smith-Schuster, 22.7 fantasy points. Talk about a guy that has risen recently in terms of fantasy impact. And then Chase Claypool has 2 touchdowns just for good measure, so 21.3 fantasy points. Great, great matchup against the Bengals, who were down so many cornerbacks. The Steelers cashed in. So, yes, there's a conversation about how you would rank each of these wide receivers relative to the others for the rest of the season. But I think in both cases, maybe the bigger takeaway is that you can play any of them in a given week, and there's a chance for it paying off.
1,000%. Guess who they play on Sunday?
The Eagles?
The Jaguars.
Let's go. Do they really? Do the Steelers play anybody good the rest of the season?
They play Baltimore the week after that.
Okay. All right.
So they play Jacksonville 11 in week 11, then Baltimore in week 12, Washington, my professional Washington football team there in week 13, and then their playoff schedule at Buffalo, at Cincinnati, home to Indy. And they finish off the season at Cleveland in week 17. But, you know, listen, it's a pretty nice schedule the rest of the way. Buffalo certainly doesn't scare you defensively. Obviously, Cincinnati doesn't. The Colts in week 16.
That's it.
The Ravens, I guess, in week 12. Like,
yeah,
the Ravens.
No, they're still good.
You know, ish. Those games against Pittsburgh are usually, you know, knockouts, you know, drag-ems, you know. Slobber knockers.
Well said. So sometimes things pay off exactly as you expect them to, right? All the Steelers have a great game against the woeful Bengals. Yesterday, we came into the Rams-Seahawks game with the idea in mind that it was possible we could have 4 top 10 wide receivers in the game. DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Robert Woods, and Cooper Kupp. Instead, here's how it all shook out. Tyler Lockett had 5 catches for 66 yards, 0 touchdowns, 11.6 fantasy points. DK Metcalf had 2 catches on 4 targets for 28 yards, 4.8 fantasy points, and I'm coming back to him in just 1 second. Robert Woods, 5 catches, 33 yards, plus 3 rushing yards, 8.6 fantasy points. Matthew's little Cooper Kupp, who maybe today he's just Cooper Kupp, because he had just 5 catches, 50 yards, 10 fantasy points. So, yes, Josh Reynolds had a great fantasy day, but who was talking about Josh Reynolds as a lock. I know Matthew had mentioned him yesterday, but I'm saying really a very small segment of people in fantasy football were starting Josh Reynolds. Here's my takeaway that I want to say, and then Matthew, you can say whatever you want. Mike Clay has twice this year tempted fate. Twice. He said, you know what? I'm concerned about DK Metcalf this week. Just two times the entire season. Once, when he played against the Arizona Cardinals, and he got Patrick Peterson shadow coverage. And then he did it again yesterday. He said, you know what? I don't expect necessarily full-time shadow coverage from Jalen Ramsey, but we could see some Jalen Ramsey against DK Metcalf. He has been money in the bank both times. Mike Clay, money in the bank all the time.
Mm-hmm. 1,000%. It was a great call. And by the way, you mentioned Josh Reynolds. Like, it was somebody that came up. They came up with me during the long shot segment. It also came up with Mike during the DFS segment. Yep. That he mentioned that he was like a really good play at the price in DFS. And obviously that paid off. So kudos to Mike Clay. Probably his best accomplishment of the week, other than he's going to beat me tonight in fantasy football. So, yeah, I mean, DK Metcalf, what are you going to do here? Like I'm in one of these guillotine leagues, you know. Daniel's already out of the guillotine league. I just have to bring that up because I'm about to go out tonight. DK, like every
you
big name
shot on your way out.
Yeah, 1,000%.
We're best friends.
1,000%. Listen,
on.
I like because that's like well, I'm about ready to go out. Like every big name player that disappointed this week, like Travis Fulgham, like DK Metcalf, like Mark Andrews, like all these guys.
Hold on. You know what's crazy? Mark Andrews may have disappointed you.
Right.
But you know what he was?
What?
He was tight end one on the week.
That's how brutal. That's
that's how bad tight ends are. He was tight end one, and he was terrible. Terrible.
Like
seven catches, apparently. That blew my mind.
So we're doing a guillotine league here on Mike Davis, DK Metcalf, Travis Fulgham, Leonard Fournette. It's a super flex league, so Derek Carr was my second quarterback because I had a guy, you know, I didn't want to play Tannehill against the Colts. I thought Derek Carr, zero touchdowns. Anyway, unless Justin Jefferson outscores Dalvin Cook today by 15 points, unless that happens tonight, I am done in the guillotine league. But I think it's important to note that I lasted longer than Daniel Dopp. I have like the third highest scoring team in this league, but they all just didn't show up this week. Derrick Henry didn't get into the end zone. I'm very bitter about it. Where's my bitterberry? Mike Davis didn't do anything. Very upsetting. Anyway, DK Metcalf is one of the people on that team. And what are you going to do? It's just one of those weird things. What's weird is that they're like it was a bad game all around for the Seahawks offense, right? I mean, Russell Wilson has a bad game. It was crazy. He was constantly under pressure. There was one or two times where DK Metcalf literally beat Jalen Ramsey. He was open deep, and just Russell didn't see him. I mean, credit to the Rams defensive front. They got a lot of pressure on Russell. You rarely see him under that kind of pressure and being sacked as much as he was. To me, it's just chalk it up to a bad day. I think, you know, things get right. They play Arizona on Thursday, right?
They do, yep.
That's going to be, that's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Okay,
a
couple minutes left here. Daniel, what do you have?
I want to close this out. We're going to talk about Bills wide receivers tomorrow. T. Higgins was great. A couple quarterbacks we want to mention. But Michael Thomas.
We have to talk about him. We have to talk about Michael Thomas.
Can I ask you this question real quick, Field and Matthew, both really quickly? When Christian McCaffrey came back after being injured, he was immediately RB1 in our rankings without a question, no doubt. Michael Thomas comes back into our rankings, and the first week back, he's still like wide receiver 8, right? And now, I understand, wide receiver
8. By the way, that was too high.
You're still starting him at wide receiver 8, but yes. Sure. And then this week. So what is the difference between last year's like best wide receiver and the Michael Thomas that we're seeing this year, where even when he came back, everybody is still not like, you know, Christian McCaffrey, wide receiver, running back 1. Like, why did Michael Thomas not do that? And obviously, we're seeing things in the field that make us nervous from this point, too.
I have an answer.
Okay, go ahead.
So, first off, you asked about Christian McCaffrey. Christian McCaffrey, before he got hurt, was Christian McCaffrey.
Correct.
I mean, like, so we had a sample for us. Like, oh, is Christian McCaffrey in this new offense under Matt Rhule and Joe Brady, is he the same guy? Oh, yeah, he is. And then he got hurt, right? So Michael Thomas, even though it's all small sample size, Michael Thomas wasn't immediately wide receiver 1 out of the gate, right? And then he gets hurt. The other thing is that, for me at least, there's a difference between running back and wide receiver. There's much less running. There's much less superstar running backs than there are superstar wide receivers where you feel good about them.
Sure.
The last thing here for me, Field, is that something's off in New Orleans with Michael Thomas, and I don't think it's just the injury. Like, he punched a teammate.
Yep.
Like, he was the star of the team was suspended for punching a teammate, and I don't know anything beyond that, but that is obviously public knowledge, and I just it's weird to me, Field, and there's just some sort of bad vibes to me. Am I insane there?
No, so what I was going to say, though, is, like, I don't think Daniel is asking why did we rank Christian McCaffrey as RB1. What he was saying is that upon Christian McCaffrey's return, he reverted back to form. So you can't use Michael Thomas's rust or time off as an excuse.
But I wasn't, right.
But I think you were justifying why we have him as RB1, and we had him there for good reason. On Michael Thomas, Matthew, so yes, you're right. There've been some weird things that have happened so far this season in New Orleans, the punching of the teammate, the injuries that he dealt with. Michael Thomas had literally not an unhistoric, like the historic receiver season last year. I'm never going to question the merits of Michael Thomas as a player. Where Michael Thomas is different than Julio Jones or Tyreek Hill, for example, Stephon Diggs as well. Michael Thomas does not have this elite level of juice and explosiveness, right? Like, people make fun of him. They go too far and call him the slant god. He's not the slant god. He's much better than just that. But some of the stuff that just separates a Julio Jones is not there right now for Michael Thomas. So when the volume hasn't been as great, and I feel bad undercutting the merits of Michael Thomas.
But he's awesome.
He's awesome. But it's been a weird year. It's been frustrating. I think he and Lamar Jackson are amongst the greatest disappointments. And Michael Thomas is not just the injury. It's what he's done when he's been on the field. He and Lamar Jackson, two of the more disappointing players so far in fantasy football.
And if Jameis Winston is going to start for them, it'll be very interesting to see. Their schedule coming up is great. Atlanta this week, at Denver, at Atlanta, at Philadelphia. So the next 4 weeks are really good for the Saints offense. Is it going to be Taysom Hill under center? Is it Jameis Winston? We expect it to be Winston. We'll see. We'll get more on Drew Brees' injury as the week progresses.
Big night tonight, Monday Night Football. Go Dalvin Cook. We'll talk to you guys
on Tuesday. Go Justin Jefferson by 15 points more than Dalvin Cook. I'm begging ya. Peace out.
Tennessee, you're in the 06010.